Hi there.
Hey.
Hi, and welcome to My Heart Remembers. This week is a tea time, and yeah. We are very blessed to have tea with Daxie.
Bonjour.
How you doing?
I'm good. It's funny, like the thing that I said, like right before we started recording is like, I want to take this conversation really seriously, yeah. And I wanted to feel confident and competent in having it. Mm-hmm. And like, I want to say this just as a preface.
And I said, I don't feel that way, but yeah.
Yeah. Is that we're talking about something weird and we're applying, you know, we're going to apply terms about psychology. Specific things
spiritual things
into masses of people, and these aren't things that we can do perfectly, but I would think of as an interesting set of thoughts and not definitive, but I think that there's something in what we're about to talk about that's really important for people to think about.
I should remind people that tea time is about that. We pick up on very specific ideas on tea time, and you and I and other people kind of just discuss them and go through them and kind of throw in our sense of knowledge or our understanding or our lack of understanding. Like, please tell me more. And I have some questions. And I'm uncertain. Now I'm beauty, because I'm uncertain how to go. And that, of course, is where I want people to be when they're listening to tea time or on tea time. I don't know where to go.
Well, so you said something to me a couple of days ago that just like literally shredded my brain right in the second.
I got it from months. Well, definitely months, but over the last couple of years, I'm meditating on something and trying to get a sense of understanding of something that occurs. But to be honest with you, I want you to know that this particular permutation in the world of what we're going to talk about isn't something I've looked at just once. I have spent years looking at other occurrences of similar things.
Uh-huh. Right? And likewise, I feel like I find myself and again looking at the actions of sometimes masses of people and feeling really baffled by them and looking for explanations of them.
And this one, of course, for me, the one we're going to talk about, it's really, part of my work in the great work is to be the alien observing. That means I'm observing myself as well, my reactions to things, and or the information I'm receiving and how it impacts me and how people express when they're encountering the world, and it's interesting. And we live in a really special time where there are many people doing things like podcasts, like what we're doing. There's people who are doing a lot of visual podcasts. And I know there's a lot of work that goes into it. Mm-hmm. But I also understand that just because you can do all that work doesn't mean you should really be doing it. And I know that people would say, oh, you're judging and, but yeah, I am. I am. Okay, folks. Sure. Hold on. There's a point where I need to discern, and there's some really, really crazy stuff going on, not under the guise of entertainment, but under the guise of news.
Yeah, and whether that be news that's, well, actually, let's just break open this egg and so I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
Are the QAnon people okay?
Okay, no.
We know that they're not.
Yeah.
So let's, beginning with an empathetic place, even though these people are causing real damage in our society.
Well, part of me to look at that needs to in essence, feel how they're feeling. And I certainly have, because I live in this world and I've encountered organizations and how they other me continuously. I live in an other world, and all of us kind of do, no matter what we do, because organizations are set up such that they have to have an other to actually exist for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. A short-term organization can go ahead and not have an other and actually do something. Mm-hmm. So That, of course, people mistake as anarchy, and it absolutely isn't, but that's okay. So I meditated on this, and I realized I had a great question for you, and it has to do with some of the elements and the base element of what draws people in. And it's not just me. I've looked around. I even interviewed a young man, caring young man, mm-hmm. who's part of QAnon, and what brought him there was his caring. Mm-hmm. And the care is for children. And this weird concept, everyone know that I have not worked with organizations to help against this, but I have personally helped people avoid being prostituted and or abducted and or there's a name for it, groomed into prostitution. Mm-hmm. And at a young age, you know, children and whatnot. So it's an area that I certainly find really repulsive, but,
well, yeah, let's be clear. Now, this shit happens.
So there's a sense of love, and now they've been told, and this is the main thing that really hit me. And mm-hmm. it took a while for me to see the obvious, which is that these people following QAnon have been told, and they believed strongly, deeply, wholeheartedly, that the entire industry of their mythologies, which are one of the most healthy things we ever had in our lives, has been taken over and is run by people who mm-hmm. are every single one of them, especially Hollywood, I guess all of these organizations out there that give you your mythologies and your entertainment have been taken over by people who are
molesting children and
well, there's a
and in an organized
a pedophilia,
fashion.
A pedophilia yeah. ring. And mm-hmm. so that means you couldn't watch anything that gave you a sense of peace mm-hmm. and fun. You can't do it now if you are part of this group without feeling an immense, immense amount of guilt. And so that was my discovery. And I had to say it out loud. It took me a while. It took me a few days because I wanted to say it to you personally, because mm-hmm. I found it to be such just a very clear and huge revelation that you would deeply understand from your training in film and other things and communication. Well,
so let's talk about this in a series of psychological terms that I'm going to bring up individually.
Yeah, go for it.
So first of all, what you're basically saying is that there is a psychosis created, a loss of touch of reality, with having some of the ground taken out from underneath of you. You know, so psychosis, I'll just read a definition, and this is a definition for individuals, right?
Okay, but on a level that most people wouldn't acknowledge, right? Because it's political. Indeed. Some people say it's political.
We'll get there, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
So beginning with psychosis is a condition that affects the way your brain processes information. It causes you to lose touch with reality. You might see, hear, or believe things that aren't real. And an important thing to keep in mind is that psychosis is not a mental illness. It's a symptom. It's a thing that can happen to anyone. Yeah. It's a mental or physical illness. Substance abuse or extreme stress or trauma can cause it. So like, say you know somebody that's an alcoholic and they cold turkey out of the booze, and the amount of stress that they're going through psychically and physically can induce psychosis, and they can have visions, and they can believe things that are insane, and they can believe things, see things that aren't there.
Okay,
and
can I give you an example?
Paranoia, etc. Right?
Can I give you an example of my own experience? Mm-hmm. I had gone out. I worked with horses, folks, for many years. I was trained by the best, in my opinion, and mm-hmm. I'm very blessed. And I had ridden, you know, countless hours and worked with these animals countless times. But one day while I was out for a ride, the horse jumped in the air, which is called spooked, right? Mm-hmm. And if you've ever seen a horse spook, it's just, it's spooky to see a horse spook. Never mind, sure. Be on one. And while it spooked, it turned 90 degrees and then bolted. And this is all within a very short period of time. Well, I fell on the ground. And I normally would roll, but I didn't get a chance to because my foot almost got caught in a stirrup. So I rolled over and I fell on my back and then rolled. So there was a lot of weight. So I was kind of out of it. And I stood up and realized I might need some help. And I actually saw the horse in front of me and started walking it in circles. And these people came over to find out how I was because I was standing there acting like walking a horse in circles and tried talking to me. I remember that much, but in my mind, there was a horse there. And I'm telling you now, there was no horse. That horse had run off. And it was back at the barn.
So was your hand up in the air holding the imaginary lead of the horse?
Absolutely, yeah. I believed it was there. I could smell it. I could see it. So that's psychosis and also hallucination, right?
Yeah. And it's none of us are above that.
I hadn't hit my head. So they knew that it wasn't brain damage or anything like that. You know,
it was the stress of it.
Yeah, oh, totally psychosis. And of course it went away, but it took a bit and it took a while to be convinced that the horse hadn't been there. And so that's just a really short-term psychosis, folks.
Sure. Well, and so for myself, I've had what I could describe as, you know, verging on psychosis. In moments of extreme stress, I find myself more paranoid than other times. And that's not an out and out, you know, hallucination. That's my mind protecting itself extra much. Extra much. Well said. But that's my mind taking care of me.
Yeah.
To protect me.
Yeah.
When I'm most afraid, right?
Yeah,
and it doesn't necessarily mean that that's good for the people around me.
Well, you began to
where I'm like, oh my God, you hate me. That's why you're being mean.
You discussed with me how certain chemicals are released in the body as well, causing more stress long term when you are in fear over differing forms of fear. And this is where my question comes in. I mean, to have your mythologies taken away causes such an incredible amount of stress instantaneously. Yeah. And to be fed other information at that point when you are in that condition, as we well know, any half-decent cult will purposely put you in that same condition anything you believed is gone, bad, it's been placed in a, and then of course you're susceptible.
Maybe I'll explain what the cortisol cycle is in like its simplest. Yeah. So cortisol is a steroid that can be released within our brain. I think it comes from the adrenal gland. What happens when we're really afraid in a situation, you know, whether it's a real situation or a false situation is another question. Our brain thinks it's real. Is that adrenaline is released to our body from our mind. And what happens when we have adrenaline is that, well, you know, that mother picked up the car to save the baby. That level of stuff is that it allows your musculature to overfunction. It allows your brain to overfunction in a, like, almost superhero-esque kind of way in the moment, right? And this is like the response. It creates a situation in which you can fight or in which you can flight. And I said that wrong because fight or flight is just a thing. But if you leave that adrenaline in your system, it doesn't go anywhere, it turns out. And it'll just like, it'll cause damage to your muscles. It'll cause damage to your mind. You're in too much of a heightened state. So your body naturally, as a resolution to this, at the same time as it releases the adrenaline, releases something called cortisol. And the cortisol is basically, it increases your blood sugar and suppresses your immune system, and it starts metabolizing your fat, and it brings down your adrenaline slowly. So it's all of the body reactions that you should have to having just gone through stress. Except if you keep having it, in your system, it makes you more prone to having that reaction. So you have, you know, adrenaline responses to mildly scary things instead of big scary things, which is a protection instinct within ourselves. Is like, so if one really bad thing happened just now, it's slightly more likely that another really bad thing is coming, right? And so our bodies and minds react to constant stress or ongoing situations of stress and repeat incidents of stress by being more and more prepared for them. But also, we're more and more prone to them and thusly more and more paranoid about the coming of them, which creates systems of stress, which increases your cortisol once again, right?
Well, you overreact to small things. So therefore, when big things happen, you can
And I'm not here to...
You can encounter an entire loss of the ability to actually understand what is really going on around you.
Exactly.
And psychosis.
So this can be a path to psychosis. And it's like, so first of all, and most importantly, is that this is a process that I'm intimately familiar with. And it's not a process that has brought me to full psychosis by any means. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with anybody that it has. I'm just saying that this is the how it happens thing. And these reactions to stress and the existence of anxiety and depression within people within our society is probably less about there being something wrong with those individuals, like myself, and more something wrong with... Let me finish this thought, though. Oh, for sure. And I'm very conscious of it and think about it all the time and try to manage it, et cetera, et cetera. But what I'm saying is that this isn't my fault. It's the way society is. And my brain was developed over hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years or tens of millions of years, however you want to look at it, to exist within a society that's very different than the one that has existed for a couple hundred years now. And so, you know, my reactions are of this time. And it's an indication to me that there's something wrong with the way the world functions. That's a much bigger conversation. But what I'm saying is that these reactions are very normal for living in the society that we live in. And a lot of people just manage to deal with them. And a lot of people, you know, end up seeking therapy. And a lot of people do a lot of different things in response to this. But when you take a population and you cause all of them to have these kinds of reactions, there's going to be a mass reaction as well. And so like when I look at,
Because there's a concept of panic, which is a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
When I first, ran into the word, I was studying Pan, which is a God, whatever.
Wait, it's so mythology. You've actually gone to the place that I wanted to go, which is great. Go on, please.
Okay, cool. Uh-huh. Well, you know me, I really do read these mythologies, but I also look at people's deciphering of these mythologies. But Pan is used in the concept of panic because now we'll talk about Pan being a trickster.
Sure.
Right. And will cause will cause shock in people. It will shock. So it's almost like as though it exists as an entity outside of ourselves in when it becomes panic, when you have a whole group of people who have suddenly been put into shock, right? Mm-hmm. And it can just be one person who creates an entire, you know, subset where a bunch of people are now panicked. And go for it. Tell me more about this. Because I was quite surprised.
Well, actually, so it's great that you brought up Pan as well.
Yeah.
I was watching the second season of American Gods last night. And American Gods is this like really interesting TV series, not perfect by any means, in which we have a set of gods who have been ignored over a period of time, losing their power and struggling. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, wow, what an interesting metaphor. But Pan specifically, which I don't believe Pan is represented in American Gods, but Pan as a specific Greek god died when people ceased to worship nature in the wild and when people started forgetting about Pan.
And what is the best place to go? And anyone who will suggest, anyone will tell you going into the forest is one of the most calming places we can go.
Yeah.
Right? So, isn't that bizarre? So Pan.
So this is, there's like so many weird connections to this, but let's just talk about Jordan Peterson for a second. Jordan Peterson is like this, you know, alt-right figure, psychologist quotes around that, because he expresses himself more as a wannabe philosopher, right? And so a lot of the philosophy that he expresses into the alt-right in America has been basically, it's just reworded Nietzsche. And I don't get me wrong, I like Nietzsche. And I think that it's an important set of thought.
Therefore, he's not being a philosopher. Because
well, he's not exactly being super original in his thought. And that's a huge conversation in and of itself. People will say what they will about Jordan Peterson. A lot of the time, he's just saying some very simple common sense things in very simple common sensey ways. And people are like, oh, he's so smart. Because he's like a, you know, he's like a philosopher for people that haven't bothered with philosophy. But so in reiterating Nietzsche, one of the things, there's a couple of things that happen in Nietzschean thought. And the first one, these are just like the glaring things. What are the first two things you say about Nietzsche? Is that there's his response to the death of God is a piece of his philosophy. And from that, nihilism, right? And the second thing that you come up with is the concept of the Übermensch, the Superman, the person that is trying the hardest and doing the best and therefore deserves the goodness. And this is the goal of humanity, is to be the Übermensch, right?
That's not.
And it's like, it's not exactly, but this is the simplistic interpretation of this shit. Okay. And so when you get an asshole like Jordan Peterson talking about it, and then it's interpreted through that into a group of people, it comes up in this like righteousness thing.
Okay, wait. We're gonna backtrack there and say his impact on people can cause a certain amount of offense, right? And so you're saying asshole, so I'm just checking you on that.
Yeah, let's not even worry about that. I'm not here to talk about Jordan Peterson. That's a thing that if you look into him enough and actually think about it, that everybody knows. But he's recycling Nietzsche, and this God is dead thing within Nietzsche is a thing, right? That Nietzsche was talking about the Enlightenment and its impacts on people, right? A couple of hundreds of years ago. And so right now, the way that I would put it is that we're going through a form of political enlightenment and a form of enlightenment about the media. And I don't want to say these things too hard. These are just ideas that I'm trying on.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I
so when you have masses
offered
of people,
a conclusion, an insight into that. And you're party on it.
Exactly. When you have masses of people being told to distrust the fake media, and there's all kinds of reasons to look at the media with a jaded eye. First of all, they're there to make money, and let's never forget that, right? Yep. This is all why the media exists, every single one of them.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, and there are people within that who are motivated for good reasons, and you can't look at any one thing and be like, CNN is robbing from the base. I don't even know.
We could blame them all for having a certain agenda that's their own. And that's a whole conversation I want to have in the future with you.
For sure. And that conversation will probably be centered around the idea that it's a thing that we need to be careful about at with a jaded eye and become savvy at understanding things and look for the facts within it. And, you know, and that's great, great, great. But when you're sitting there thinking that your whole life that you've been lied to by the fake media, and this is just being sold to you every day.
That's the political schism thing that's happening to people.
Well, sure. This is like a cracking of a whole bunch of eggs of people's brains, right?
But I mean, the other level here, I mean, because information is important, I guess, if we're going to, obviously, if I'm going to deal in a situation, I kind of want to have the appropriate information to do that. But as a human being, I, you know, as a person, need a certain amount of, let's say, entertainment, you know, so I can just sit back and, you know, whether it be the stars, because I'll tell you, I will spend time staring up at the sky when I get the opportunity. I have a window for it here. But there's also watching entertainment. As you know, there's a bunch of shows I love, right? But to suddenly not be able to watch that.
Yeah.
Because it is evil in a way that is like unspeakable. Like the evil, it's like there isn't a person on the planet who, if that were true, which it is not, if it were true that all of Hollywood were a part of a huge pedophile ring, which also goes into politics and blah, 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 that means that level of entertainment is gone. Can we talk about that? The impact of losing your icons, losing your play, losing your sense of just a momentary gratification on a journey.
Sure. Right?
Outside, especially now that we've had over a year where we're stuck indoors and entertainment is more right now. Right. There's a certain amount we need more. And there's a lot of people doing great things like drawing and whatnot. And, you know, finding things that are healthy to sublimate, as they would say.
So let's dig back into the gods thing. What are the gods that we have right now? You know, it's, we end up with Thor through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, and a lot of the things that we consume, especially in this era of heightened popcorn movies of superhero mythologies, is very centered around the ideas that that Nietzsche was speaking about, is that these are like, these are the Übermensch, right? And also that these are like the representation of a better version of humanity or a god to humanity.
Well, anyone who is has a price to pay as well in any mythology. This is something that, you know, because there are the heroes, right? Which which means that they are human, right? Then there are gods who, and they're not necessarily heroes in any of the mythologies.
For
they're kind of, they're the thing that a human is interacting with. So they can interact with Pan, they could interact with Thor, they could, you know, there's a level where there's the Übermensch is being developed, right? In, and maybe you become a hero. And typically you'll discover it's just the real work of the story that you've gone on that gives you a that actually provides a broader sense of what it is to be human.
So let me cycle that back around to a story that I read from what I would consider to be just a random thing that I clicked through on a tweet, and I haven't looked into it. There was a lawsuit against Donald Trump, which the circumstances are kind of weird, but it's a Jane Doe lawsuit against Trump from a 13-year-old girl or a representative of a 13-year-old girl saying that Trump violently raped her at an orgy. And this is in like 2016.
Well, I hadn't heard that one.
Well, it came up and it disappeared really quickly. And so I can't speak to the validity of that. The lawsuit was basically canceled after it just being a blip really quickly. And I can't speak to exactly the timing of this. But the thing that I read was basically positing that the day that this came forth was the same day that Pizzagate came forth.
Oh, okay.
And so what Pizzagate is, it's a conspiracy theory, and it's a very, very well debunked conspiracy theory that went super viral during the 2016 presidential election. And basically what this purports is, broad strokes, is that Hillary Clinton and another set of monstrous assholes were taking part in a child sex ring that was run out of the basement of a pizza shop. Well, it turns out that when you look into this Maria thing with the Trump anonymous sex, this is the name that comes forth as Maria, and I don't know if it's my place to say that, but anyway, somehow within that story, something about a pizza place is there within that. So what do you do? What do people do when accused of something terrible?
Point the finger elsewhere.
There's
a bunch of things, right?
And it's so
get enraged.
Yeah.
And we call that thou dost protest too much for a reason, right? When they're enraged and overly enraged.
Sure.
And we also compensating.
Call it psychological projection, or another really much better term for it is introjection. And so these are terms used in psychoanalysis. Introjection is the process by which the subject replicates behaviors, attributes, or other fragments of the surrounding world, especially of other subjects. So what it is, it's a self-stabilizing defense mechanism. So if somebody puts forth projection in order to protect their ego, it's almost like they believe it, right? The mechanic that's occurring in the mind is that they're easing themselves by saying, no, it was you that did that bad thing that you just said that I did. They might not even be conscious of it. And I would purport that these things function not just within individual minds, but within collective minds, right? I don't think that that's a huge leap, is that group behavior is very similar to individual behavior when you have a mass of people having really similar experiences. And I was looking for a way of speaking about this, that's why I brought the word panic into this.
And that's why, because there is the, when one person panics, it spreads, and it spreads like wildfire.
Yeah. And so we have terms like mass hysteria or moral panic. And these things within people who are afraid. Yeah, mass psychosis, moral panic, mass hysteria. Hysteria is a word that's leveled too often at women, but it just means fear, you know, and the actions that we take because of fear. There is a list, just very quickly, looking at the Wikipedia for moral panics. And it's a fucking fascinating list. And I just want to kind of read through them and like very quickly dissect each of these things because they're all stupid, right? So the idea in the 70s that there was tampering in Halloween candy made my parents and every parent look very carefully at the Halloween candy and be afraid of their neighbors that they might, you know what? It just hasn't happened. It might have like happened from like one father trying to injure their own child so that they could say the mother did it and have like some kind of a couple of those have happened, but it's just not a thing that ever occurred, right? People weren't putting razor blades in apples. It's just suddenly you couldn't give out apples for Halloween because everybody was paranoid. Violence and video games. There's never been a correlated, proven situation in which video games cause children or people in general to think violently. If anything, it's been repeatedly proven that the opposite is true. The paranoid war on drugs. Well, it turns out that when you suppress drugs, people fucking die from it. So from the 70s forward and, you know, the DARE and all of this stuff that we were taught when we were children about drugs, it would be way better for society if drugs were just completely legal. And I'm not saying without some controls or whatnot, but you wouldn't get people dying the way that they're dying now and the way that they have been dying for a really long time, you know, and then you wouldn't get people sharing needles and spreading AIDS through that. And that's your next moral panic, right? Well, it's the gays, and the gays are spreading this horrible disease amongst us, and we all need to be afraid of the gays. Turns out it wasn't at all true. It's just that the gay people were an easy scapegoat in there. I could go on and on. There's so many examples of this. You know, satanic ritual abuse is another one, and I want to speak about that one.
Yeah, because it's just a moment. Completely insane.
Yeah, and I want to speak about, I'll just say that one of the closest people that I've had in my life throughout my entire life was somebody who was molested as a very young child and whose mother didn't believe her. And in that time, in the 1950s when that occurred, nobody was really looking at child sexual abuse. But it was happening just as much as it happens now, just as much as it happened in the 80s. Well, maybe even more so. But because nobody was looking at it and nobody was defending it or anything like that, and people weren't really seeing it, it was just occurring blindly behind closed doors and not being believed. And so over time, as we learn that children have been molested, you know who the last person that we want to blame for that is? Is ourselves. So the last person that this beautiful person's mother ever would have wanted to blame for the molestation of their daughter is themselves. So they blamed the molested daughter for lying, right? Mm-hmm. This kind of shit happens, has happened so much, and you blame externally, and you blame Satan, which is, like, it's ludicrous from this point to be like, there was satanic cults that were stealing children. But you know what? It's the same thing as the QAnon stuff.
Okay, but let's go back to the
satanic thing. This is exactly where I am. Yeah, it's like cycling back to the Pizzagate thing, is that is external blaming, is that it couldn't possibly be Donald Trump that actually did this shit. Whether he did or not is another question that I don't necessarily have an answer to. But that being in the ether is that we have a political belief, we have this anxiety that's creating cortisol within all our systems and all of this fear. We don't know what to do with it, so we project. And I don't know whether that's a thing that was politically or carefully disseminated and done,
but this is the root of all of the QAnon stuff. We're going to go to something there that we're not really looking at with this.
Uh-huh.
Because as you're saying, it is those who realize their own guilt unconsciously.
Yeah.
This is where the issue gets really difficult.
Oh, it's muddy as heck.
How it, like, falls in on itself once you've done that, once you've said, okay, I can feel that I'm to blame somehow here. I feel awkward, like just like
I got a single sentence for you with this is, no, you guys are the real racists.
Yeah.
How dare you? Just you're like, the real racists for saying that black people are oppressed.
Thank you.
Holy fuck.
So it's that reaction from guilt.
You can't even see reality.
Yeah, well, it's a whole cycle of its own. And so you begin to, as they say, when one does first deceive, you know, you weave yourself into a very terrible place that's almost impossible to get out of.
And you know what? And I think they believe it. Right. So what happens
at some point
when you start doing this, when you start believing the idea that the Clintons and a set of celebrities
What's a bigger picture, right?
That means stealing children and draining a drug from their brain and using it to stay young. It's like, it's
well,
insane.
It goes further and further and further because, okay, we do know that Epstein, and I know people I've met.
There are real pedophiles in positions of power, 100%.
Well, even further than that, right? Being a pedophile is disgusting, but actually grabbing children, abducting them, and grooming them is way more disgusting. That whole thing. So that is so horrific.
It exists, in as heightened of a sense as has been put forth. It does exist.
Well,
it does happen.
You're
it
in
doesn't
a state
seem
of shock
to be connected. Yeah, it doesn't
when
seem to
that.
Be connected to politics. But in the 2016 election, and from every point until now, everything is political. Every little thing. Everything is political. So now it's like those Democrats in Hollywood are eating children's brains. It's madness, right?
Okay, this is the point. But we're talking back about what I was proposing, because my thing is to say, well, what has been, why is it so desperately intense out there? Because we know for sure that there's a portion of 7 million people or 70, how many was it, who voted for Trump?
70, I think, like 69-ish or something. Yeah.
I said a proportion of them. Obviously, they're not all into the idea of, they've heard of Pizzagate, so it could be part of their understanding.
Well, but that's when you hear things often enough.
But QAnon has gone way further with these things, like way further, folks. And of course, what it has done, Pizzagate itself took away from a huge amount of people, was this ability to be able to sit down and look at their own mythologies and gain a few moments of peace and fun. And that in itself is what I'm proposing is a huge impact on everyone out there. Because to be honest with you, even if I don't believe this pedophilia ring, part of me does not, you know what I mean?
let me put forth a thing that is a very real thing.
Because I know there are people, but that type of organization of it, if it does exist, that's in any way is horrific. And of course, I have spoken with people who are trying to help people like I had the opportunity to do in my life, who have been, groomed and forced or abducted into the sex trade at a young age, as an example. The people who are trying to help them are now stifled, and that makes me really upset.
Yep. So let me
that
say
that is disturbing as all get out.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
For me, the last 4 years have been the most stressful years of my life. And you know what? Within that, I have had some very disruptive things that have actually been wonderful things. And you and I have been through some things together and come out the other side of them. But you know what was the most stressful part of it? This shit. This politic of America.
Well, it's not just America.
Part of it. And like the, right? the broadcast
no,
of...
No, QAnon
let me just... Yeah. For sure. It's not just America, but it's born in America and it is of America. And so like this fucking narcissist, Donald Trump, ends up president and gets all the attention that a narcissist could ever want and just feeds off it like a fucking vampire, right? And it grows and it grows and it grows. And you can see it. You're just like, do you guys not see what's going on? This is an emperor with no clothes, but we're all pretending and all feeding the narcissism.
Do you know the tale of the Emperor of No Clothes? Because I've heard a lot of people say that term and then tell the story and they're wrong. They don't actually understand it.
I think that I do.
Okay.
There's a story by, is it Hans Christian Andersen? Yes, it is. So it's about a vain emperor who is, you know, is to be dressed in the finest of attire always and spends lavishly on the clothing, like the most that you can imagine spending. And some kind of con man comes in and offers to make him the most magnificent clothes that have ever been made. They're so magnificent that you can only see them if, and I think this is part of it, is you can only see them if you're pure of heart. You can only see them if you're really smart. You can only see them if you really get it.
So
they charge this emperor a fortune and pretend to put clothing on the emperor, and the emperor has to believe the lie, otherwise expose himself to be the fool that he is.
Thank you.
Yes.
And that's exactly
what... the people in the streets and everybody around the emperor is like, oh my goodness, that's the greatest suit I've ever seen. Wow, it's so beautiful. And the emperor is like, well, the suit must exist. I've got to keep pretending. Mm-hmm. And he gains the confidence to go walk before all of the people.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to seem like he's an idiot. And a single child blurts out that the emperor is naked. And then everybody realizes that they've all been playing along with this idiocy. So it really,
thank you.
It
the
really
important part
does
is that, that the king is an idiot.
Yes,
like an,
or at
in
least
really
doesn't want to be
way.
Seen as an idiot.
Well, no, he is in a really bad way. He's extremely vain. I mean, he's painted as really not a good human.
Yeah. Our arrogance can turn in on itself sometimes. And it's a thing that, you know, we have to watch for. It's a thing that I watch for. It's like...
Well, we're talking to each other as well, that this is... This is part of being alive, you know, it's okay. But if you're going to be in charge of large groups of people, it really cannot be the motivating factor of you.
Sure.
You know,
so
because it creates the worst decisions. That's the part. He obviously wasn't able to make decisions, this emperor.
Yeah.
Right? He couldn't even just step back and go, the way you didn't put any clothes on me himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly. So I hope you don't mind that I'm guiding this whole conversation so much, but I set up a thing that I'd like to close out because I think it takes this to the place that you're really talking about.
Yeah.
Is that, so what happens when you tell people about the West Coast elites and the people that are working in attainment and, you know, quietly in the background, somebody whispers, do you mean the Jews and stuff like that, right? Is that you've got a collection of this like quasi folk knowledge and supposed information. And what happens when you're in this state of collective denial and moral panic over saving the children from predatory pedophiles, right? Is that what happens is that you believe it more and more and more. And because we exist in a world that just like, it just isn't fucking fair and it's not working right. Right? Like in America, in Canada, in the rest of the world, nothing is working in ways that is really, really humane. And we all feel that all the time is that we're not doing things right. And that's not to say that it's not better than it was before and that it won't be better soon. But it is to say that the world overflows with injustice and we all see it.
Yeah.
And the fact that any children are molested is horrific. Yeah. Truly. And you can feel that in your heart.
Yeah.
And it can lead you to believe some ridiculous things. So it can lead you to believe that there are these elites that exist. Because you know what? There are elites that exist, but maybe not this one. And it leads you to believe that the control that's going on in the world is centered around secret evil. That is actually just a replication of Jewish conspiracy theories that are centuries old. This stuff, this QAnon stuff, has been said for hundreds of years about the Jewish people. Now they're not naming it as the Jewish people. They're like, oh, it's the Hollywood elites. Well, you know what we've heard over and over and over again that's also not true is that Hollywood is run by the Jews, and that banking is run by the Jews, and that, you know, and that political power is controlled and manipulated by the Jews. And we've been hearing this since the lie that was the Protocols of Zion was told, and even before. And so now this lie is spreading. And you know who people stop believing in that actually traumatizes them? They stop believing in their new gods as they're referred to in American Gods, the show that I was watching last night. And what are the new gods? The new gods are media and stardom and George Clooney. George Clooney seems like a really nice guy. I don't think he's eating children's brains to become stronger and live longer. You know what I mean? And it's like you start putting it upon.
Well, you're not seeing them.
All of the leftist folks or the folks that are Democrats within the entertainment industry. And you know where democratic thought or like whatever that political movement has really taken hold and succeeded? Within music in the post-hippie era and within entertainment in Hollywood. It functions really well for people who are artists because artists really give a fuck about the world and have empathy. So these are the people that now this, you know, section of the alt-right is looking at as your terrible monster that's eating babies' brains so you can live forever with Hillary Clinton.
What I want to say, though, is that if you watch a movie, you know it's a story.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Sure.
Now, if you get that taken away from you, all of a sudden, you still crave that, right? You still crave something that is bigger than yourselves and that you have to fight for. And you know, so a good story, right, lets you go through that process in a general way. And to be honest with you, it can help you to actually maybe step up and help somebody in your community. You know, if a show, a movie, or a great tale has reminded you of something that you could offer your community in some ways, it may not be being Batman.
Sure.
Right? Obviously not. But
well, there's also great things to take from being Batman and terrible things.
No, of course.
But,
no.
Batman is the ultimate Ubermensch, right?
What I'm saying is that it is that whatever you have to offer isn't going to be as big as the myth, right? Mm-hmm. You can only offer what you are as a human, and it could be anything really loving, right? It could be anything. But what happens when that's taken away from you? This sense of how do I become, you know, a better part of my community, or, you know, there's other things it does as well. It might make you feel anxious about your physique, and maybe you need to go out for a run. Sometimes if you watch a show, you're going, oh, I don't think I'm in very good shape. You know, it could do all kinds of things to you, but entertainment, like reading stories, is a great way of just relaxing yourself. And if you watch it now, after you've been programmed to believe that all of this entertainment and all of this everything around you is a closed window to you because the evil people, horrific evil people, are running it and are in charge, how could you watch it? Mm-hmm. You couldn't even consciously watch it. And if you did, you would feel the tremendous guilt.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even real.
Oh, yeah.
And as you say, at that point, you need to point the finger.
Okay.
Rather than watch a show and go, oh, I could do something cool in my community, this inspired me in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Something loving.
For sure.
In my community. Like, I think I'm going to sew these things and give them to someone. Whatever it is. You know,
All right. I want to drop to you another kernel of Nietzsche. And it connects to the Ubermensch thing. And then I'm thinking about it because you said, you know, Batman is a representative of this. You know, interestingly enough, played by George Clooney once. Let's put forth that Batman is a god figure to some people. Or like, you know, quietly without thinking about it.
So, yeah, he's not a god, he's a hero.
Yeah, right. Batman exhibits something called will to power. So because Batman's parents were killed, Batman found an inner core of strength to further the billionaire that he was and to join with, you know, oneness with his body in martial arts and fucking learn how to karate chop criminals and do ultimately good things. But what we have here is actually like a quote-unquote metaphysical principle.
I'm going to be pedantic and say he did not study Japanese form, so karate chop is incorrect, just so you know.
Okay. I don't want to dig into that. I was just being a dick. But the will to power thing is basically the secret, you know, that philosophical idea that is rooted in, you know, I think, therefore I am. And if what I think is powerful, then I am powerful. And if what I think is beautiful, then I am beautiful. And it's, there's this greed within that and this ignoring of others that is like, you know, for building yourself. And the phrase, the will to power, transmitted itself from Nietzsche forward into Hitler. And this is like a fundamental tenet of Hitler's conquest for power and a fundamental belief within the Nazis is that there is a will to power, is that we can exercise power over people both by benefiting or hurting them. And when we hurt them, we make them feel our power in a way that punishes them.
Well, and this is making me feel like I'm standing in the middle of a grocery store, and you know how much I love that.
Well, it's an uncomfortable truth that one of the core tenets that brought Hitler to power, that Nietzsche put out into the world as truth, and I'm not here to say that there isn't something to manifestation and to the individual's will. What I'm here to say is that you take that from the darkness within some people, and it becomes greed. And they enact this in greedy ways. And that this is a big problem that exists within our world today, is that people feel that they deserve so much and that they've been so wronged. And I'm not saying that they don't, and I'm not saying that they haven't been, but utilizing that in darkness.
Oh, okay, well, you're heading back to where I was speaking about viewing things that are greater than yourself. Yes. And understanding that, wow, okay, I'm not that, but I have something.
Uh-huh. I'm right? just saying and that can be twisted.
And there is virtue in adding that something into my community, right? Somebody such as Batman had access to many more things and, of course, in a broader spectrum was offering much more than I may. But why can't I at least offer something? Does it have to be that grandiose? Well, probably not, because I'm not going to be able to step through the hoops. I don't have the money, resources.
Sure. And,
you know, there's many reasons why it's just not going to happen in that particular way. Who knows all of them? I'm discounting that physically maybe I could. Well, I'm joking, seriously. But there's a level of offering to your community by knowing there are the potential of greater offering greater than yourself, right? So the other side of that is a type of greed that you were discussing earlier. This greed for being something way bigger than you already are and you have to offer.
Yeah, it's like, so I can't like dig personally into the psychology of Trump, because I feel like we get a presentation of him rather than the reality of him. But like, so we're kind of looking very broadly about the psychological effects of Trump on a certain set of people, right?
Well,
and the belief that somebody can build themselves, and the belief that Trump built himself, right, as the Übermensch, the Nietzschean Übermensch that is at the core of this set of weirdness that we have, and the belief that exists within our society that we can all be that if we just try hard enough, right? It's, you know, there's a belief that's more powerful that, that, you know, that we can be a billionaire when it's actually far more likely that you're 2 weeks from being homeless right now and starving. I know I am. I'm not going to be a billionaire in this life. It's just not going to happen. But what I wanted to go back to, my response the other day when you first put this question forth about QAnon was they've lost their gods. And the gods that we have now are television mythology. And film, and these are our mythologies. And I don't understand how we don't realize that, you know, is that whether America's a Christian nation or not, it's a television and film nation. It's a media nation. And so if you start imagining that all of your heroes are pedophiles, well, what a shattering of the heart that is.
And everything around it is pedophiles. So
and it sets up the mass psychosis.
Thank you. That's really all I was trying to mention is that. Yeah.
I feel like I could have taken this last hour of conversation and said it in 10 minutes, but I wanted to dig into all of it.
No, I'm appreciating it.
It's heartbreaking.
Because I wanted to mention it to you. Because you have education that's very different than my own, and part of my being is that I would view something like this mm-hmm. to have a better, greater understanding of how to approach people in this condition.
Yeah, I don't know if I have answers to that. I think
this is a help.
They need a new mythology, right? And that the mythology that they're currently engaged with.
Well, they need new mythology because I'm not saying that's the answer. A good psychologist could come in here and you know, now recognizing that they have an individual in front of them, and I'm sure they've had it before. Mm-hmm. And this is where I talk about doing the great work. To a degree, we don't realize it, but we are going to shed old mythologies and walk into new ones, no matter what, because mm-hmm. the old ones are going to lose their shine and their gleam in some way. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that when I do the great work, I know this before I step in and take them on. Mm-hmm. I know that they're going to lose their glean, and I don't know exactly why, but I will learn something through the process of letting it lose its glean. Because for me personally, I'm interested in being more familiar with how to be a better citizen to the other human beings around me, if I can. Mm-hmm. And if I can, because I'm not certain I can.
But you know what? We're all so busy, and I don't mean all of us, but collectively, we're so busy, and it's so hard to do those things. And I totally get it if somebody isn't actively involved in that stuff. I'm about to lay a big compliment on you. I think that what you're talking about is a sign of a really good person, whether they're winning all of the battles in that stuff. You know, it's this stuff is about growth, and not being in a place of growth is understandable. Maybe you're in a place of self-healing or whatever. But the darkness that can occur within a person when they're not engaging. And so, like, you end up feeling alone. Right. And then what is the result of feeling alone is that you seek others that feel alone.
Well, that's not exactly the answer though.
This is not an answer. It's it's more of the problem.
But of course, that feeling of alone, mm-hmm. which is furthered by losing your gods, if we'll say the other that is infinitely more grand than you. I mean, because in the end, we only have one God.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so this end. Is the thing,
Meanwhile, I consider these things processes. Mm-hmm. I frankly, my experience says that each individual is going to actually, whether they realize it or not, shift their perspective from one particular angle of God to another, to another, to another. And there is a distinctive pattern. And the issue is that if you don't understand your own bio sense of being, you're not going to understand how to learn from the perspective moment you're in. And you're not going to be able to appreciate as deeply the mythologies that you are, you do, or you have invited into your life as right and wrong.
Yeah.
And the joke is that a great myth won't give you right and wrong anyway, but it certainly will challenge your ideals of right and wrong.
Well, it's, you know, what have we got outside of our stories that we tell each other? It's like, this is like, when we think about how reality is created, you know, if we dig into even the hard, deep science of it, perception is this wildly important thing. And our reality is the sum of our culture, which is the sum of the stories that we tell each other. Right? So we have a collective aesthetic. Do you know who Walter Benjamin is or was?
No.
Okay. Walter Benjamin was like a philosopher, German fella, Jewish fella. It's kind of a eclectic wild guy in Germany pre-war. And in
first or second?
Second. So he wrote this like really phenomenal book called The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Production. And this is why I know Walter Benjamin, is that, you know, he was talking about what it means to print mass amounts of novels, or like have everybody be able to look at the same photograph. He didn't realize that one day we'd have fucking Instagram and TikTok, but all of the thoughts apply the same, right? And Walter Benjamin came up with, before Nazism really took hold in Germany, the idea that the aestheticization of politics was like a key part of how fascism functions and how totalitarianism functions, to say that, you know, this is a thing that occurred within communism so it's okay, like, when we look back at these things, do they have such cool posters?
Wait. When you're saying this, one word like patriot is
red hat, man.
Okay. Yeah. You're speaking like, aesthetics. Like, you're talking about how
the strength of the aesthetic of red the and fucking black Nazis. And
white. Red and black and white tells your brain something very distinct. If you see it or you see somebody else carrying it, of course, this goes back to when you're in trauma, you really want to have people who are agreeing with you have the same aesthetics now.
Yeah.
Right.
So
rather than in that moment, actually acknowledging that, oh, that's just a bunch of colors.
Indeed. This is a symbol. And that, yeah,
it doesn't actually have meaning until I put it there. No, it doesn't have meaning until I put it there.
So here's a question.
And wait. And then you don't have the ability to actually question what is going on here.
Mm-hmm. So additionally, and this is taking it outside of Benjamin into my own personal thought, but would you imagine that there's an aesthetic to being Christian that isn't necessarily about color, but is about belonging, that is about having a collective, that is about having a community? Oh,
well,
right?
I always thought their entire process of doing their rituals, because I have practiced rituals, sure. And the rituals I practice take a lot of work on everyone's part.
For sure. There's, let's not
okay,
take
but
it
no,
too
wait,
far,
no,
but
wait,
just to the idea
wait,
of community
no,
within it.
Let me finish. Mm-hmm. This is important, because basically in the Christian ritual, it is always in the same order, like any ritual would be. You have not been a participant in the process of the creation of it, so you truly haven't had the time and the energy to actually focus on it, but you got to be around a bunch of people who all believe in the same aesthetic.
And you can feel safe around and comfortable with, and you can say your stupid shit.
Yeah.
And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I have taken part in aesthetic belonging, you know, especially teenagers do this a lot, is that, you know, I was wearing big baggy pants in the 90s and had long hair and looked like that grunge rock and roll thing for a while. You know, that was my aesthetic, and that showed that I was part of a group. And it showed that I wasn't alone, even though, like, as a teenager, I really felt alone at times, you know, and that's okay too. But I think we all feel alone at times.
Yeah.
And being left without the gods of television and being left feeling ignored by politics. And then suddenly being able to put on a red hat.
Yeah.
That's belonging.
Yeah.
You know, and sharing in this like mass moral panic is an aesthetic as well. Is that it is, it's fucking stupid, but it's also an aesthetic, is that we're here and we all believe the same thing. Therefore, we're together and we can tell you that these guys are stupid. And you know what? When I look at the political past of America and I look at the critiques that come against the, you know, quote unquote, supposed left in American politics, the Democrats, because they're not really left. I'm mad at them too. And they've done some bad things.
Yeah.
And I get it. Yeah. And if you're against that, I'm against that too. But if you're needing to wear a red hat and believe a whole bunch of lies, so yeah, it's like the breathing out that I've done over the last couple of weeks because America didn't fully fall to fascism. Yeah.
Okay. The issue I have with this is that there are patterns to what happens to an individual when they have a psychosis, right? Mm-hmm. This is really important because essentially unconscious garbage, like when I was trying to walk the horse around, that's kind of cool. I was trying to calm the situation down, right? So it tells you something about the really deep nature of me.
Sure.
But most people have never taken the time of day to even, say, contemplate really simple things in their life. And so they haven't spent time acknowledging their own, you know, ideas, and they haven't stepped back and said, well, I'm going to watch myself.
It's hard to grow from a place of fear. This is my struggle, right? Is that the cortisol in my brain, to go back to that, is that I'm so often in a place of fear that the only time that I, you know, really do the big growth stuff is when it hits me in the face and I have to deal with it.
Well, I agree and disagree because some of the most profound things that happen in the world are when you have some trauma in your life. And that's when, like I said, I fell off the horse. What I did, right, was I was trying to make it safe for everyone. I don't want a horse running around. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I created a horse that wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So my whole thing was to take care of everyone.
Yeah.
That's my psychosis.
Well, it's like you're saying, like I've known you for a long time right now. You're a very empathetic person. And I wish that there was more of that in the world. I won't pat you on the back too hard, but you're a very kind-hearted and good person. And, you know.
It's something that's underlying in the nature of who I am.
Yeah. And it's very clear from the fact that both of us are quite poor that that we're not the greedy sort that are stomping on others in order to make money and stuff like that. Any stomps that I've done in my life have been, you know, accidental. And it's so maybe there's a thing to say.
I'm not placing myself anywhere, but this is just a natural part of who I am. That's what I have to spend in my heart, as Christ would say.
Yeah.
No, seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a really important thing, especially since a huge amount of these people claim to be Christians. And Christ really wanted everyone to know one thing, which is that there's a point where you need to take responsibility for what you do have to spend from your heart, mm-hmm. and don't spend it.
Yeah.
Right. Now, of course, that means you're going to have to work, because the reality is that any one of us can have a psychotic reaction. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that most people become violent. Do you understand?
Or at least isolate themselves further. It's one of the...
That's terrible. Either way, right? Definitely. I wouldn't want somebody to isolate themselves, perhaps. Like I prefer to, mm-hmm. when I'm actually not in a good state where I don't have warmness in my heart. I don't want to be around others. I don't want to be around others because I don't want to spread that around. So actually getting healing for myself meant that I did actually have to trust others.
Yeah.
Right.
So there was
at a time I wouldn't normally want to be near people mm-hmm. to say, okay, I'm messed up right now.
Yeah.
I'm anger. I'm rage. I wasn't even rage. Just,
well, it's, so for rage. Folks that don't fully understand what the, you know, the things that were being said by QAnon in the background, and their fundamental belief is that basically that somehow in the background, Trump was setting up a situation wherein he would be taking down all of the people from the deep state and all of the people that were enabling all of the, you know, child molestation and killing of children to take the adrenochrome out of their brain and all of this stuff, right? And there was a shattering of some of these people that occurred when Joe Biden became president of the United States fully. Because right up until that moment, they could believe that they were still right. You know, there's still people believing that Trump is secretly working against all of this evil that they've invented.
People who think that Trump is still the president and that this Biden thing is all completely imaginary.
Yeah, yeah. And there's being people done that on believe purpose. That Hillary Clinton's been in jail for 4 years, even though she has a podcast. You know, it's madness. But here's the thing, is that when those people got shattered out of it, and these things went, you know, went viral because they make a real point. And I don't know how many of them there were, but I saw at least four where they're basically saying, oh my God, none of it was real. Do you know how much I've lost? I lost my job. I lost my sister. My wife left me and won't let me see the kids, etc., etc. Right? That waking up, that's the real waking up.
Yeah.
Is like just realizing how deeply you've been taken and then like trying to explain that to yourself. Well, fuck. How do you do that? Yeah, how do you look back on that and feel anything but angst and awful?
Well, there are people out there who are coming out of this, and let's face it, something like the psychotic reaction I had after I fell off the horse from mm-hmm. trauma, was very fairly quick, right? But it hadn't been embedded. I didn't have people around me who tried to agree with me, right? I had everyone around me saying, oh no, Zena, you didn't walk the horse. It's back at the barn right now. Reality was there. I didn't have people on top of my trauma adding crazy ideas.
Sure.
Right? It was more like I was in a condition where I wanted to help and make things safer. Well, they did too. Mm-hmm. So to those people out there who are in this trauma, who are suffering from psychosis and you don't realize it right now, I'm saying to you that there are people around you who would be happy to tell you it's okay. You were in psychosis. And this is to the people out there who have people around them who are coming out of this psychosis. I mean, please consider being as gentle with them as you can. If they become criminals because of it, well, that's another story. Well, I can't
and
go
it's,
there.
It's
I
not
can't
to go say, there. It's not to I'm say not that they're not responsible.
No, I'm not mm-hmm. finished. Yep. I can't go there. When it comes to the ones who did criminal acts, mm-hmm. I can't go there. Yep. That's not for this show to handle. That is its own thing.
Sure.
I am, however, proud of people who are turning these people in because they are a danger to themselves and others. But let's face it, the ones who are just on the edge, they haven't done anything. They've just spoken. Mm-hmm. They've just been watching stuff and indoctrinating themselves. Fearful of the world, terrified people. Mm-hmm. That's why when this vision, you know, when I saw the equation of what was going on in this situation, that part of it, you know, the whole thing of a type of entertainment, they've lost a level of their sense of community.
Yeah.
Because their mythologies are gone. You know, there's nothing to look greater to that is greater than themselves to give them a sense of hope and understanding. And they've been fed stuff that is hopeless. Mm-hmm. And now if you're still stuck in it, it's even more hopeless because you see that you'd have to admit it's a lie. Mm-hmm. Right. So my heart goes out to them.
For sure.
And it goes out to all of us who've had to actually live through this.
Yeah. And it's like, maybe there's a thing in just reminding ourselves while we think about this is that we're telling story as well within this.
Yeah.
Is that we're broadly creating reasons and trying to create understanding of people. And it's like, you know, but tropes exist for a reason. And I just Googled the phrase, "My God, what have I done?"
Oh, cool.
And it took me to a page that's about TV tropes. And it begins with a quote from Les Mis Rob. So Jean Valjean, after robbing a priest who had just given him shelter in his desperation, saying, "What have I done? Sweet Jesus, what have I done? Become a thief in the night, become a dog on the run. Have I fallen so far, and is the hour so late, that nothing remains but the cry of my hate?" And, you know, the TV trope explanation of this is that this is a well-intentioned but misguided character, and really often tears of remorse may accompany the action of evil. And that there's, you know, maybe a last second chance to be better. And there's a must make amends. And, you know, there's vindication and validation in overcoming that which you almost were or that which you were for a little bit. And, you know, if we're sitting here talking about people losing their gods that were Marvel superheroes, let's enact this story on them. Let's say that they've got to realize what they've done and they need to break themselves out of it. I'm not here to do that for anybody. But I can look at them later, having recovered and realized and wept tears of remorse and made amends. Do I expect that that's going to happen? I don't know. But anybody that does those things, I'm down with, you know, that's growth. You can be terrible and then grow. I've been terrible in moments in my life, not like alt-right terrible or QAnon terrible. Just like, I've just been stupid and blind at times and I'm better now.
Well, for me, the only reason I bring this up is because I would like to encourage people. That's all of us to a degree, that the information we get takes responsibility. And it takes responsibility for each of us to take it, to have stewardship over our own community and those closest to us in our community first, and have a caring sense for them, and consider that these people out there in the world who have lost everything, you know, if somebody who's a stranger gets hit by a car in front of my place, I would treat them the same as I treat these people, which is make sure that they get professional assistance of some sort, or, you know, whatever it is, some sort of assistance, because that's really what I'm saying that we've run into is a large group of people who've fallen for a panic. And there is a reason to be panicked right now. And it's called COVID-19.
Oh, sure.
No, that's a good enough reason. This other stuff, folks, really, you need to ratchet back and realize that, you know, it's not, to be honest with you, the information coming out at this time, this moment, is that there are mutations going on. We don't even know how far they are. I mean, okay, I was really excited. You know, I was. When I found out that they had vaccines, right? And now they've got mutations they're discovering, and I'm left with, oh, shit. This is exactly why I personally was going to put a certain amount of stewardship on myself to take care of my community so they don't get the disease from me, because the mutation level is a potential, never mind giving it to others, which is horrific, right? Giving it to others.
Well, to break that down, so if we didn't have these mutations that had occurred, it might have been possible to, like, by summer, midsummer, to have vaccinated enough people that COVID numbers wouldn't continue to rise. But I don't think that that's the way it's going to play out now. I feel like this is a spring of next year thing, is that we'll have a false sense of security in the summer because numbers will be going down just like they were last year. And then we're going to get hit again in the fall because we just don't have a completion of, like, it takes the, you know, the, what's it called? The amount of people that are vaccinated, herd immunity. The herd immunity is somewhere between like 75 and 90%, right? So that's how many people need to be vaccinated before this goes away, eventually. And it's sure ain't instant. So making sure that the people most at risk of death are vaccinated is a great thing. It doesn't mean that we're out of the woods, but... Oh, yeah. Anyway, this was all a lot.
No, I was just going back to what we really should be worried about.
Yeah.
Rather than living in this fantasy world of, you know, I mean, I just received a message from somebody online who expressed to me that they stopped going to their church because the minister had put up the screen. They have great big screens mm-hmm. now in these evangelical types of churches and whatnot. A picture of Trump and said he's anointed by God and so he had to stop going.
Yeah,
right. So he lost something precious to his soul,
you more lose
precious
community.
Yes, like
and
so
it's happening
all being,
to us all. Yeah,
we're all being hit by it and. There's people out there who've lost their best friend. You're saying family, friends over this. Yeah. It's on both sides of the, obviously it's something that I quite frankly, have a level of seeing it without a lot of emotion sometimes, because this is something having studied that humans, have a habit of, having these types of things occur.
Mm-hmm.
We historically have these sudden floods where people just go out. Now, I love that the people are saying something. These group, well, we're not violent. Yes, you're not, but you are, right?
Violence performed is a like really interesting.
No. I'm going to go back because this is the kind of thing that has happened in the past. I consider it the best way of describing it is, I talk about pen, but to me it's like a virus. And of course, when you start studying, the idea of panic, you'll discover that it does just flow through from one person to the next. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that in the past, and I'll give an example over in Europe, I gather some of it happened here afterwards, but during the 13th, there was for about 100 years there, but early on in the 13th century where they went forward and people just went out and killed, it started with Jews. And Jewish people, and then it moved off to the witches, and mm-hmm. It kind of stuck with the witches and witchcraft for a very long time.
Yeah,
and it was if you look at the maps of what happened, it just happened on its own. But they were obviously there was a bunch of tropes going on that people believed, and bam, it went over the edge, and the church was
and
happy
it was
to
politically
have.
Useful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that could have been managed easily had somebody said, hey, folks, you know what? The witches are not bad.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's, you know,
hey,
it's
folks,
so
the
creepy.
Jewish people are not bad. So part of me has a type of rage at people like Trump.
Well, yeah.
Because
so like, okay,
he,
so legit, I'm sitting here
he
as a trans person,
off,
right?
Yeah.
So think about how this functions. For thousands of years, if not tens of thousands of years, people like me have been suppressed in our society to the point where if we were to enact our true selves, we'd either be killed or shunned to the point of committing suicide. So mostly throughout history, mostly people that were trans that didn't have any power in our society just shut up and kept it inside or only shared it with your close loved ones?
My studies tell me that there were cultures that didn't do that, but they're not part of what we live in.
Exactly.
Right? So you have to go a long way back when it comes to what we live in, the Western culture, coming out of Mesopotamia, coming out of Greece, coming out of Egypt, where we can't forget that people who are ruling class have methods of subduing the masses.
Indeed. And so the point that I was going to go on to make, though, is that for trans people, you know, being forbidden to be in the military is one thing. Being told that you can be refused health care, you know, these things that Donald Trump did, this movement that happened in America.
Oh, okay. We're going to go back to the
very real consequences.
We're going to talk about the other level of violence.
Finish exactly that. This is the violence that could occur and that did occur, and that there were more hate crimes against trans people, more hate crimes against people of color. That violence, very, very real physical violence, occurred, as well as the violence that occurs when you can't eat. Right, that being poor is violence that is perpetrated upon people, and that this is a violence perpetrated by our culture, that is a violence perpetrated by our government, right? That these situations exist in which more indigenous people are forced into risky situations than white people, et cetera, et cetera.
I have heard great explanations of the ideas that these people are using, and that Trump uses on, you know, the tropes on them about weakness, this concept of weakness and whatnot. And there's a whole set of ideals around that. Yeah. How really, in the end, all it is that the answer to weakness is to be violent.
Oh, exactly.
Well, to be enraged.
That's the Ubermensch bootstrapping shit.
It's it's disgusting because it's weak, right? So you just give a list of what weak is, right? You and I could come up with it. I think it means that you put orange coloring on your face, and you brush your hair back, and you wear red ties with blue suits. That's a sign of weakness, folk. How about the person who picks up their guitar and plays a song? That's weakness. How about the person who stands up and wears a uniform like everyone else in Congress? They wear the same suits. Everyone wears suits. That's weakness. Mm-hmm. That's following the anyone who follows someone else is weakness. I'm going to go over a long list, and it's stupid. None of it matters. It's all a lie.
Yeah.
I'm lying to you.
Mm-hmm. It's about what weakness is.
No, weakness doesn't exist.
Thank you.
All humans are powerful. Now, the thing is that you can other someone, like is happening, put them on that list like I just did, and you actually become hatred of the weakness or whatever it is, right? It's just a list. It's not real. And if you actually check it, I want you to check your religious privilege, babe, because none of us have true virtues. We can only aspire to them. That's what I have to say to all you folk calling yourselves religious.
Well, it's so, like, that was a lot intense, but I do agree for the most part that, you know, imagining the goodness of yourself is part of enacting this thing that is bullshit that goes on within, you know, within the super spiritual crowds of, people who are quote unquote manifesting things for themselves and this new age stuff. And that's
not check your privilege at the door. Yeah. If you're going to,
and that's, I was going to say, that's not an indictment of people that believe these kinds of things. That is just to say that, you know, the concept of we and the concept of a collective and our existence is not as alone as what loneliness feels like, and that we are not alone. And it is important to remember that we are in a community, and that it's impossible not to be in a community, and that all of our actions have to exist for that community. And further, I know this is a thing that you've been on about lately, and it's something that I very powerfully agree with, is that the indigenous conception or North American Indigenous, in particular Anishinaabe conception of thinking ahead seven generations.
It's humbling.
Yeah.
It's humbling. Isn't that beautiful? I'm really into things that humble us.
Mm-hmm.
And it is
like that's your community. Is your community is seven generations forward and seven yeah. generations backward. And if I felt like I was taken care of and nurtured by the people who came before me, that would be a very powerful thing. And it's possible.
Wouldn't you want to follow in those footsteps?
Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't you want to follow in those footsteps?
Exactly.
So you want to know more about those footsteps,
mm-hmm.
and you want to know more about how there were people who actually considered that we could put the value that all humans are sacred.
Yeah.
And right now, some of those humans happen to have a different skin tone to us and in North America, and they're being treated horrifically because of it or because they're native.
Mm-hmm.
And I gather there's a different skin tone. I don't care, but you know what I mean.
Sure.
So if you're participating in that, folks,
mm-hmm.
then you haven't even stepped through the door of humility yet.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's like,
it's work. I was baptized, therefore I'm privileged and I'm above everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. There's work to be done. I mean, let's face it. There were masses of people who your Christ, absolute incredible being, came forward in front of when he was pushed to do it, because really he could only teach a few at a time. Even he could only teach a few at a time, right? So they had to do real work before they were allowed to even hear his voice,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a reason for that, folks, because really you can allow yourself to realize, no matter how painful it is to be wrong, it is one of the most beautiful things in the world, the most humbling things in the world to be wrong. Admitting it is even more incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I hate admitting it. It is harsh. I hate to hear when I'm privileged. I don't
You know what? Like the first bunch of times that it happens,
and you don't
really want to think about it. I went through that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's I've shed my little share of white tears as well, you know, of the like rejection of it. And what I did was use that to like let myself think about these things.
Thank you.
You know, and it's like it takes effort. It ain't easy. But this is our obligation.
There ain't no wisdom without humility.
Yeah. There's this thing that people say every once in a while is like, you know, from, you know, right wing places is they want to remind you that we live in a society as if that's something that discounts something. But the truth of it is that we live in a society and that we need to look at everyone in that society and look for justice within that. And like even more than justice, look for the equity that is possible. And you know, the more that we can lift all, the stronger we are together. And this is something that takes empathy. And we live in a society that destroys empathy. You know, it makes it really hard. And that's a weak thing to have.
Empathy.
Oh, yes, the weakness.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's my greatest strength. I ain't giving it up.
Well, I thank you so much because you always offer such incredible insights from that gentle, loving heart of yours.
I hope that what I said collectively made a kind of sense, because I took like a 45-minute detour into responding what it was that I knew that you wanted to talk about. But I felt like positioning it within psychology and positioning it within the very real things that occur within human minds was probably a more powerful thing to do. I hope it was.
Yeah, I am interested in perhaps getting ourselves a couple folk on for a tea time you or I come up with some crazed seven generation ideals that we could have for the future.
I like that as a thing.
And get it
dreaming is a beautiful thing.
Okay, and get it torn apart for a tea time.
Mm-hmm.
I perhaps will ask my last guest, because he might be interested in tearing them apart, Andrew Brandt, for example. I'll see if he wants to join us. He's busy, I know.
Yeah, no, that would be very funny. He seems like a sweetie pants.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Daxi. You're just fantastically helpful in getting through. When I saw it, it kind of stunned me, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is really important that we address this.
Yeah, and it's you know what, like this thing, I've not read anybody talking about this stuff from this perspective, so I don't feel confident in every thought that I've had in there, nor have I like buttressed it with like deep research. But I also think that this is like a really powerful way of thinking about this stuff. And it's been eating at me for months and months, years, really. It's like, how are people getting to this fucking place? And
I'm just giving one very important reason.
Yeah.
That psychosis can happen to someone when they have something traumatic happen, and to instantly lose all of your mythologies is devastating. Devastating to anyone.
Indeed.
And basically, it's at the heart of the psychosis, the mass psychosis that is going on at the moment in the world. Certain one, very particular one that has to do with QAnon.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for giving me so much to think about here. It's been a pleasure. Good night, Tina. Yeah,
always is. Good night. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I'm looking forward to coming back. I said coming back here soon and bringing you another show of My Heart Remembers.
Rate, review, subscribe. Yay.
My heart rejoices in all.